Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. So today at noon is the kickoff of the first game of the NFL season as your Chicago Bears take on the Houston Texans at noon, a perfect time to talk football in Chicago. Now, Patrick McCaskey is the grandson of George Halas and is currently the co-owner and vice president of the Chicago Bears, as well as the chairman of the Sports Faith International Advisory Board. Pat is an author writing three books, Bear With Me, A Family History of George Halas and the Chicago Bears, Sports and Faith, Stories of the Devoted and the Devout, and Pillars of the NFL, and a new book coming out later this year. And joining us in studio this morning is Patrick McCaskey. Mr. McCaskey, very happy you can join us.
Dave, it's great to be with you. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
I saw you speak at my childhood parish over the summer, and I must tell you, we had three generations of family there, my father, my son, and I. My son, who's at Notre Dame High School, by the way, where you went as well. All of us were inspired by you and your stories.
Thank you, Dave. It's wonderful that three generations of one family were there. Family is very important to society and the Bears and to me.
Let's first talk about your legendary grandfather, George Halas, who owned the team for 62 years. I love your story about his journey, which started with a career at Western Electric in Chicago.
Yes, on July 24th, 1915, he was scheduled to be on the Eastland for the trip to Michigan City, and he was late because his brother Frank wanted him to check his body weight before he went on the trip. And by the time he got to the dock on the Chicago River, the Eastland had capsized, and he was not one of the fatalities, but he was listed as one in the newspapers.
Wow, that I didn't know.
And the next day, a couple of his fraternity brothers from the University of Illinois came to his home to express condolences to his mother, and they were very surprised and delighted to
see him,
to have him answer the door.
Your grandfather went to the University of Illinois as well?
Yes, he went there in 1914, 15, 16, 17, and he lettered in football, basketball, and baseball, and he was an engineering major.
And he played sports with him. He was the most valuable player in the 1919 Rose Bowl. He played right field for the 1919 New York Yankees. And tell me a little bit more about how he got into football.
After the Yankees placed him with a minor league club, he decided that he didn't want to try and be a professional baseball player anymore. So in the fall of 1919, he played professional football with the Hammond Pros. And on March 18, 1920, George Chamberlain of the Decatur Starch-Making Company met with my grandfather in Chicago and offered him the opportunity to learn the starch business and to play sports for the Decatur Staleys.
Wow. And that was of course, that was the start of it all. So the winter of 1922, the name changed, of course. They won the first of nine championships, though, as the Staleys, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the fall of 1921, there was a recession, and Mr. Staley gave my grandfather $5,000 worth of advertising to move the team to Chicago with the stipulation that the team nickname Staley's be retained for one season. So in 1921, the Bears won their first championship as the Chicago Staley's. And grandchildren of Mr. Staley sometimes wonder what their lives would have been like if their grandfather had sold the company and kept the team.
Yeah, $5,000. Yes. Pretty amazing, pretty amazing. Now, that was a big year for your grandfather, too, because within a year, he married your grandmother.
Grandma Min.
Yeah.
After a long courtship, they met in high school, and she was a fan of and from an opposing high school, and she heckled my grandfather while he was pitching. And they met after the game and then worked at Western Electric together and eventually got married.
Wow. Your grandfather was quite an optimist. I mean, he really made it through a lot.
It was important to be an optimist when he was here because he saw the country and helped the country through two world wars and the Depression. It was very difficult for the first 40 years of the Bears' existence to survive. And the big breakthrough was the television contract in 1960, where all of the revenues from television were shared equally among each of the NFL teams, regardless of the size of the market.
You've been going to games since you were like 5 years old, training camp since you were seven. Love that you're Notre Dame High School alum, right, in Niles. My son's at Notre Dame. And you played football in high school.
I did. I was on the 1966 Notre Dame High School varsity football team that won every game by an average score of 38-9.
Now, at some point, you were told you couldn't play football anymore.
I was on my way to Cheshire Academy, a prep school in Connecticut, to get another year of playing experience. And my eye doctor asked me, how much is your football career important to you? And I said, it's very important. And he asked, is it so important to you that you'd risk losing your sight? Mm. And I replied, no.
Yeah. Yeah. And for football, which was obviously a major influence in your life, how did that make you feel at the time?
Well, my father and my grandfather were very helpful. My father said that everybody has something wrong with them. Everyone's handicap is different because each of us are unique. And when we are strong in an area in which others are weak, we are our brother's keeper. And my grandfather said, it doesn't matter what you do as long as you excel. So I ran cross country at Cheshire Academy, and it worked out very well for me.
Now, you've been around football all your life. You started working for the Bears 42 years ago. How did that journey begin?
For my last two semesters at Indiana University, I lived in a sorority with 70 ladies as their caretaker.
That's not a bad gig. I remember you telling that story. That's not a bad gig, yeah.
And I gave that up to work for the Bears.
Wow. That's a big sacrifice. A big sacrifice. When you started working with the Bears in 74, who was the big player at the time? Who was the star player?
We didn't have any.
Yeah. It was about a year later that you brought Walter on, right?
A year later, we drafted Walter Payton in the first round, and he was a tremendous player for 13 seasons. Best football player I've ever seen.
What was your job at the time that you started with the Bears? You know, what did you do exactly?
I started out in the ticket office as an assistant, and that was until training camp. I went to camp as the publicity assistant. And when my father introduced me to the Bears press corps, he asked me, would you like to show these guys some of those poems you've been writing? And I replied, not at this time.
Okay. You became PR director for the Bears?
Yes, in 1982 and 1983.
And director of community involvement, director of special projects, and you still handle special projects for the Bears?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. And then a Chicago Bears board member as well. How long did it take you to move from being in the ticket office to being the team's board member? I mean, what was the span of that?
Well, that was about 30 years, I guess.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, you worked your way up. I mean, that's how this family works. This isn't just because you have a name behind you that you do that. I mean, you work your way and you work hard in what you do.
Yes, that's very important. My grandfather and my parents and my Uncle Mug stressed the importance of due diligence.
Of course. Football and Faith, one of your books, of course, are focused on the subject. It was part of your grandfather's success, was bringing faith into football.
Yes, he is in the Sports Faith Hall of Fame. He was a man of faith and a man of prayer. As Father Bannett, the president of St. Joseph's College, Rensselaer, Indiana, described him at his funeral. It was very important to him. He didn't talk about it, but he certainly lived it very strongly.
You have a story about the original meeting, which is now the National Football League, and then what has been put together as the Ten Commandments of football.
Yes, the original meeting for what is now the National Football League took place on Friday, September 17th, 1920, at Ralph Hayes Hupmobile Car Showroom in Canton, Ohio.
Wow.
That's why the Pro Football Hall of Fame is located there.
Of course.
There weren't enough chairs for Hay and Hallis and the other founding fathers, so they sat on the running boards of the cars. The Ten Commandments of Football. One, football is a wonderful game. There's blocking and tackling and much, much more. Be enthusiastic. Two, Weddings, births, and vacations should take place during the off seasons.
That's a great point. Absolutely.
3, remember the Hupmobile in the original meeting. 4, all previous games are preparation for the next one. 5, obey the personal conduct policy. 6, work for the good of the league. 7, win championships with sportsmanship. 8, you shall not criticize the officials.
Love that.
9, you shall not covet other teams' coaches or players. 10, game times are tentative and subject to flexible scheduling.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite. That's my favorite. And you have, this is something that, the team does live by.
I saw my grandfather live it, and I wrote it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. How is your faith, and I know how involved you are in so many things in the Catholic Church, how has your faith helped you over the years through difficult times? I know you've had those difficult moments that you've shared with me before.
It's important for me to go to church and Bible study and have daily devotion, and I find daily Mass and frequent confession very helpful.
You were, you tell the story about in 64 when you were a Notre Dame High School sophomore, and you had some hairline fractures in both your hands while playing football.
Yes, that was during the preseason practices. And the varsity football coach, Fran Willett, said to me, "You don't run with your hands, stay in shape."
That's right. Some years ago, you went to Mass at St. Mary's Lake Forest. During the Mass, some church concrete steps were painted. It's another time you certainly look for your faith.
Yes, that happened just a year ago.
Yeah.
And I went to Saturday morning Mass, and during the Mass, some concrete steps were painted and left unmarked. So after Mass, I slipped down those steps and had a gash in my right hand and was taken to the hospital, and the priest, Father Grezik, was taken out of confession and gave me a blessing and said, "This is not the last rites."
Good.
But he was very helpful and repeatedly said that the church will handle all the expenses.
Mm-hmm. The doctor, were you told that the doctor was a Packers fan?
Yes, before he put in 8 stitches. And I counseled him by saying that some of the greatest Christians started out as atheists, so we shouldn't be discouraged. And Jesus forgave the good thief. All he had to do was repent.
Yeah, exactly. And the Packers have 13 championships. The Bears have 9. It's disconcerting a little bit.
Yes, very much so. We're hopeful that the world will not end until the Bears have the most championships.
I think so. Talk to me a little bit about, other ways in which you relate your faith with sports. Because, I mean, this is the core of one of your books. And as I said, my son and my father and I saw you speak, and it was just very inspirational on how you really need to make that part of what you do on the field.
Well, if the apostles had played football, they would have been a great team. Peter would have been the quarterback like Bill Wade. Andrew was Peter's brother. They would have been used to playing catch in the yard. Let's put Andrew at receiver. James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John were known as the Sons of Thunder. They would have been the running backs. We don't know much about Philip, Bartholomew, James, the son of Alphaeus, Thaddeus, and Simon the Cananean. So they would have been the linemen. Doubting Thomas would always be encouraging his teammates to play harder. Let's put him at middle linebacker. If Mike Singletary had been one of the original apostles, the other apostles wouldn't have slept in the Garden of Gethsemane. Matthew, the tax collector, was used to dealing with money. Let's put him at end like George Halas. Matthias, who replaced Judas, would have been the kicker. Paul would have been a writer like me. He wrote a lot of letters, even though the Corinthians were the only ones who ever wrote back.
Many people might not know this, but there is an office for sports at the Vatican.
Yes, that was instituted when St. John Paul II was the Pope.
Okay.
It was his idea. He was an athlete, and he sought to make a connection between sports and faith.
And did you meet the Pope?
No, but I've been to Washington to see Pope Benedict and Pope Francis recently.
That's wonderful. And you're the chairman of the sports Faith International and the Sports Faith Hall of Fame. Tell us a little bit about this organization.
Well, Sports Faith recognizes people who are successful in sports while leading exemplary lives. So we have a ceremony on Pentecost Vigil where we induct people into the Sports Faith Hall of Fame to shine light on heroes to inspire other people to be heroic.
Because that is important. I mean, you know, you are, especially when you're a member of an NFL team, you are an example. People are buying your jerseys. They're wearing you on their backs. You know, they expect you to be an example not only to them and to their children as well. They look up to these players.
Yes, it's very important for us to be positive role models and make outreaches to people to inspire them.
Now, you've been with the Bears 42 years. How do you compare the Bears from when you started to today?
I chart the games and keep track of the run-pass ratio. The 1940 championship Bears ran the ball 73% of the time. The 2015 championship Denver Broncos ran the ball 38% of the time. So the game has really changed.
It has, absolutely.
There's much more passing now than there was back in the 1940s.
Any predictions, hopes, dreams for today's game against the Texans, or better yet, for the season?
I think the Bears will win every game 28-12.
Really?
We'll score a touchdown and an extra point every quarter and hold our opponents to a field goal every quarter.
Okay. I'm going to quote you on that.
All right.
Okay. The team is always encouraged, and I know you've told this story before, to join you, your mother, Virginia, and the family at Mass before a game.
We have Mass and chapel service before every game, home and away, and before the home games, and the away games, we have it at the team hotel.
But your mother, Virginia, she sits up front, so she doesn't have to see who comes and who's there and who's not there, right?
Yes, that's right. She does that on purpose.
Yeah, it's a good move. It's a good move. What does being part of this legendary family mean to you?
It's a marvelous blessing, a tremendous legacy, and a wonderful opportunity.
And what would you say is the biggest thing that you've learned from your grandfather? Because you got to know your grandfather, George Halas.
He was very hardworking and prayerful, and that's the approach I take.
How about a Bears prayer for today's game?
Thank you for asking.
Absolutely.
Bitterness is spiritual cancer. Forgiveness is spiritual rapture. Whether it was a reminder that God is the boss, the Spirit strengthens us even after a loss. Jesus Christ is the man. Salvation is the plan. When we dance God's dance, He gives us another chance. God's work is efficient. His food is sufficient. Here's a part of my prayers. Bear down, Chicago Bears.
There you have it. There you have it. Chicago Bears Vice President Patrick McCaskey, thank you so much for sharing these stories with us, and go Bears.
Thank you very much, David.
All right, much more ahead on 720 WGN.